Hello and welcome to Curious in Motion. I'm Sam McCormick and today we meet the inspiring Angela Wiley. Angela works as a project manager for Calderdale Council. I first met her a few years ago when I started Welland Festival in Elland, which is a small market town in the Lower Valley area of Calderdale, about 3 miles south of Halifax. Angela is currently working on some exciting projects for the town, which you'll hear about in this episode. I've always been inspired by Angela's openness to share her experiences, so along with some exciting Elland news, today she shares with us her love of place and nature, plus a very personal story about the most difficult year of her life. We discuss some experiences that you might like a heads up on, so if so, do check out the show notes first. Let's get into the show. So, welcome, Angela. Thank you so much for joining me. It's lovely to see you, even though we are virtually doing this.
Yes, thank you for inviting me. It has been a long time. I think everything, time has become a funny concept in 2020. Some things seem very recent and others, yeah, ages ago, and they're not. Very odd. But nice to see you too.
You've been a massive support for our work, particularly regarding Welland in Elland, which is our wellbeing festival. Having got to know you and having all of your support with that, which we're so grateful for, it would be lovely to chat about your experiences working in Elland. I know that you used to, in a previous role, work quite closely with the businesses in Elland.
That's right, yeah. I was Calderdale's first, I think, inaugural retail and market towns support officer, which generally involved working with businesses across the valley, all the ends, as previously mentioned, and looking at how they could work together to drive momentum in their own towns. Obviously, the high street environment has changed again this year, but at the time I was doing this, the main rivals were internet shopping and big out-of-town shopping parks, and people had forgotten the joy of the independence on the high street, I think. So the role was created to encourage people to work together and for the good of place, I guess, would be there. But Ellen just quite quickly became one of my favourites. I just have a soft spot. It sounds a bit romantic and silly, but I really genuinely think it's a sleeping little gem. And I don't know what the silver bullet is, but I'm sure it's there somewhere, and it just needs, well, it needs people like you and Matt moving in and pushing and with ideas. And I suppose it always needs money. So, but there's promise. For me, there's real promise.
Yeah, definitely. There's absolute joy in lots of places. It's just not so obvious sometimes. But once you get to know people, yeah, and you get doing things, that's where you find it.
Well, one good thing, I mean, colleagues have worked on this. I can't take credit for this, but a very good bid has gone into a government scheme called the Future High Street Fund for, mm-hmm, Elland, just with some mini projects around the town centre to try and drive footfall and thus encourage business into the place. So it's difficult for me to mention my employer because I don't want to make it awkward for anybody, but there is still a genuine desire to see Elland succeed. Often it's lack of resource, but this hopefully, gosh, with everything crossed, we'll finally send some money Elland's way and we can get on and deliver for the town.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And the library plans, we've seen all the scaffoldings up and everything's still there.
Yeah, it is.
So there's nothing happening at the moment. I can imagine it's slightly different.
Yeah, no, it's, oh, you would love it, actually. From an artistic point of view, you'll have to get your hard hat on and come and have a look. It is, you know, there was a dance hall upstairs. Do you know anything about the history of that building? And
yes, yeah. I heard about the dance hall. I'm very excited.
Beautiful sprung dance floor. Upstairs, that, but we, since the council took over the building for library services, oh, I think in the late 60s, don't quote me, she says on a recorded podcast, we haven't used the upstairs, and unfortunately it fell into quite bad disrepair, and it was barely safe to put any weight on that floor upstairs, so everything has pretty much been ripped out. The building is a shell, and we are just starting the remodelling inside. The roof is almost complete. It's had a new roof in that it's having had new batten, but we're reusing quite a lot of the old slate tiles, which were still in good condition. Current projections suggest it will be all complete by mid-March 2021.
Okay.
We've got to be careful because if we get an exceptionally bad weather winter, then that could be pushed back slightly. But at the moment, on course for spring next year for a lovely modern facility again for the town, and it will still be a library, which is important. But it will centre council services and secure them in Elland as well. It will mean there are staff in Elland from various departments of the council to, in turn, spend their money on the high street. It's circular, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's really exciting and it's nice to have that a focus, I think, in a town like that. And the fact it's staying as the library, I know lots of residents and visitors are really keen for the library to stay, as in other towns as well. But also have, like you say, that presence and also the something the community can use and the community can be proud of.
Absolutely that. Yes. Yeah. Some investment in Elland. It is important, without a doubt.
You grew up in Calderdale originally, is that right, Angela?
It's not right. No, I'm a Yorkshire girl through and through. I am Sheffield born and Leeds raised. Then I married a soldier and went off around the world, and he was from Calderdale. So when the time was, let's draw a big circle on the map and see where we want to settle, that is how I landed in Halifax, and I would not live anywhere else now. I love the hills, and I love the canal, and I love the people, and the Peace Hall, and the Borough Market, and the market towns. Just I could eulogise about this place. Definitely not moving anywhere else.
Yeah, I am similar. I'm not from this area originally either, but my husband is from nearby, and I went to uni in Leeds and left for 10 years and then came back and feel very similar to you. And I think that's where our connection with Elland comes in a little bit as well, in the sense that there's so much, you know, the countryside here and the beauty in that respect, but also the people. And I just think it's just a fascinating place full of wonderful things that people can do.
It's the stories. Oh, there's history on every corner, and people's stories are brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, so talking about stories, it would be lovely to. So you, I remember you saying that you travelled all around the world when you were younger, and
That's right.
so is that for your husband at the time at his job?
That exactly that. Yeah, I can't claim to have been some independent backpacker that went to Borneo. I went to Borneo with the support of the British Army. But nevertheless, I'm so glad to have had those opportunities. What they say, travel broadens your horizons, broadens your mind, whatever. It certainly did for me. Just meeting different people, different backgrounds, different ethnicities, absolutely turned me into who I am, I believe, very much so. But yeah, I've been to wilds of Borneo. I actually lived in Brunei, Sam, which is a terribly civilized place, but there were lots of exploring opportunities there as well. So I feel very lucky, and it was a great base because you're already halfway around the world. So I've travelled in Australia and New Zealand as well as most of the Far East, and it all feels like a lifetime ago some ways, but very clear memories as well.
Any favourite places at all that like
Oh,
highlights from that time?
Singapore, I love very much. It's 22 years since I was in Singapore. I would love to go back when we're allowed to travel again, just to see the changes there and have a little bit of an explore. Just bits of Malaysia were very special. Brunei itself is a fascinating place, intriguing, very wealthy country, lots of oil. People tend to have heard of the Sultan of Brunei, and it often the perception is that it's Middle East, but it's actually in the sort of top left-hand corner, the northwest of Borneo, which is largely Indonesia and rainforest. But just a really good experience.
So I was was going to ask as well about what brought you back. And I remember you being very open with me about your experience with your, it's your son, is that correct?
It's my son, yeah, who's 21 now, so this is a long time ago. So Matthew was born in Germany. We went from the Brunei posting back to Germany. We'd already spent some time in Germany. That wasn't too daunting at all. And we had a nice 2 years of babyhood, and my second child, who's a girl, now 19, was on the way. And Matthew had been unwell for a few weeks. And by the time I've got a doctor who listened to my concerns, we were at the hospital the same afternoon, and by that evening he'd been diagnosed with childhood cancer, a rare cancer called hepatoblastoma, which is affected, it's a tumour of the liver, very rare. And within a week, me being heavily pregnant, but within a week we were on a plane to London and living in the Ronald McDonald House in Southeast London, in Camberwell, near King's College Hospital, which is where Matthew had a lot of his initial treatment. Again, this all seems a long time ago. He was two, and like I say, he's 21 now. But it was the most difficult year of my life, without doubt. We were without a home. We were in a part of the country where we didn't have friends or family. And we were expecting child number two within weeks, and child number one was really quite seriously ill. It was, yeah, a hard going few weeks. The army were tremendously supportive and had found us a house. I think within about 4 weeks, yes, it would be about 4 weeks, we lived in hospital, in parents' accommodation, which is what Ronald McDonald provide. And then on the very day that we moved into our new army housing, army quarter, that's the day that my daughter decided it was time to arrive. So we literally had lived in hospitals and hospital facilities for a month. And the one night I was going to be back in my own bed, she was like, no, I don't think so. So we were back to hospital that same night and safely delivered of a baby girl. And yeah, it was a roller coaster of a year. And I always say that I was as glad for her, for the stabilizing influence. That might sound a little odd, but she was the normal bit. There was a baby that needed taking care of as well as fitting in Matthew's treatment. And so they're both so important and so meant to be here. And yeah, love them beyond measure. And I'm entirely, completely grateful for the NHS as well.
I always think it's really amazing how open you are about your experience. And you've always been, you know, very open to chat to people about it. And I can only imagine how hard that must have been with all of that happening all at the same time, let alone having a diagnosis for a young child. And how long was Matthew in treatment for?
So he was diagnosed Valentine's Day. It's a day you don't forget. He was diagnosed the 14th of February, and we were given his chemotherapy, and he had chemotherapy, then surgery, then more chemotherapy. And the second round of chemo, which were four doses, finished at the end of the November. He was having regular checkups throughout the Christmas period into early 2002. And then unfortunately he still had a central line fitted, which is a device that allows blood to be taken easily and treatment to be given. And that became very badly infected and he ended up with sepsis. So we were back in hospital then in the March, April time. Gosh, it was one of the worst days of my life, and I can't even remember when it was. So what does that say? That would be April, April 2002. So I always say, whilst the cancer treatment successfully concluded in the November the previous year, he didn't start getting completely well, and we started our journey to his complete recovery for a big 6'2" strapping young man that he is now until the April of 2002. So 14 months of very regular hospital treatment and very regular hospital appointments and stays. And since then, and I did worry that he would always be a sickly child, and he'd need antibiotics for everything, and every bug that was going, he would catch. Total opposite. Barely had a doctor's appointment or any drugs since, other than his standard treatments, his standard checkups, rather. And yeah, he's just left me and gone to university. He's a little bit of a late starter. He's worked for a couple of years post A levels, but decided 2020 was the year he would like to go and start studying. So, hooray! Yes, yeah, so they're both at university now, and I might have to get a dog or something.
So your daughter's at university as well?
Yes, she sort of took the standard route. She went last year immediately after her A levels. So she's in year two, but she's
Okay.
younger than him, if that makes sense. So,
Yeah.
yeah, he's, yeah.
But you, I suppose this year then you've had a pandemic to deal with and also a child leaving home, which I wouldn't know myself, but I can imagine it's a very emotional time. And also, knowing what you've
Yeah.
been through with Matthew and your children and how you have all come out of that, I can imagine that's rather a lot to deal with in one go.
Yeah, it was, yeah, I guess it was a biggie. I just, every sort of milestone, even though he is a young
Yeah.
adult now, there's no denying this, towers over me. And like I said, he's 21. There's still something about every milestone bringing you up sharp and thinking how it could have been and how absolutely blessed and lucky we are. Because, of course, we met families during that period who did not have the outcome that we had and very sadly lost their children. And it makes me think about them, and it makes me think, well, like I said, how lucky we were, but how lucky we are to have the NHS and the skills and expertise. So it's about counting your blessings, and it might sound corny, but it really is for me.
Yeah, I was going to ask what you found most helpful from that experience. So I suppose is that a sort of a level of gratitude?
Very much that perspective as well. And gosh, we all have bad days where nothing seems to go right and you're grumpy at the world. But it's, yeah, about realizing. I remember when things were really much worse than this. So just keep on keeping on, kind of thing.
Yeah, amazing. And there's something I'm a big fan of gratitude, and having looked into the science behind it as well, there's lots of evidence into how it helps you, helps it changes your brain in a positive way and all of this sort of stuff. But
Wow, how interesting.
yeah, really interesting. And do you have any sort of specific practices when it comes to gratitude, or is it that case of reminding yourself when you need to and
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I know I have bought as gifts actually, because it is quite a popular thing, gratitude journals for other friends. I don't know what I'm trying to tell them, but I've never done one. I don't finish each day and say, oh, thank goodness I've got a roof over my head and that. But even when this whole thing kicked off, the pandemic, and I'm again one of the lucky ones. I have a job. I'm able to work from home. That's what well, both kids were at home in the spring when we first locked down. And I would say, look, we are the lucky ones. You will get fed tonight. We are warm. We are dry. We have a roof over our heads. And I am still bringing a salary in. And there's just something in my mindset that looks for the positive. Gotta sound sickly, don't I? I'm not saying I never get fed up, and I never find different life experiences challenging. Of course I do. But yeah, there's not a practice that I do. I don't regularly write down what I'm grateful for, but I'm aware of it. I am always aware of it.
yeah. So Matthew is well at uni. Hope he doesn't mind us talking about him on here without him being here.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he is well. He is at uni. That's probably about as much as we're allowed to say without. No, he's settled very well. He's enjoying his course. Yeah, and since Matthew has been well, I don't know if I've ever told you this before. Well, the first thing they said to us at diagnosis, and you have to remember this is 2001, so Google is still a relatively new tool. And the first thing they said to us was, don't Google it. They've told us this long, complicated name. Don't Google it. And I absolutely did not Google it because the doctor had told me not to Google it. And we didn't have phones in our pockets then. You had to switch the computer on and make an effort with the big old clunky thing to Google something. So then we dug down and cracked on and did all the treatment, etc. And once he was well, I did Google it. And from Googling it, it put me in touch with a lady in Australia the wonderful Pam, whose son Regan had had the identical diagnosis to Matthew, just 3 days apart. They had the surgery 2 days apart, and they had literally been, well, we still say your cancer twin, which is probably inappropriate, but at the other side of the world, going through exactly the same, and we didn't know each other at the time. But because Pam had blogged on the subject, I found that through the power of the internet, and we have been in touch ever since. And I met her for the first time a couple of years ago. Matthew has been out to Australia and met Regan, and they travelled, did a little bit of into the bush and did some wild camping in Australia. My little skinny Yorkshire boy and his Aussie counterpart. And I would love that Regan can come here and see Europe when we're allowed to travel again. I feel like a broken record. And I certainly intend to go to Australia at some point in the next 5 years or so and see Pam again. And there are other girls in Australia whose kids also had hepatoblastoma who came together through Pam's blog. So that was an immense support and continues to be, because you get to the point where they're 12 or 14 and there's a problem at school or whatever, something has happened. And I would talk to those women before I talk to my closer friends here, because everything that ever went wrong was never our bad parents, and it was because they had this condition when they were two, obviously. It wasn't anything, any mistakes that we'd made. Goodness. But it was interesting to touch base with people with the same experiences and find that, oh yeah, so your boy perhaps struggled making friends, or and there may not have been any connection at all. These were not things related to their physical health. Yet they did have very similar experiences with their schooling and relationships as children and young adults. It's been enormously supportive for me as that.
Wow, that's so fascinating, isn't it? I can understand why you would, going to those people first would make so much sense, because it's such a unique experience that, you can't possibly be able to explain to somebody who hasn't experienced it.
That's right. And you do think, I mean, I know you said earlier that I'm very open about it, and I am very open about it, but also acutely aware of how it might make other people feel, whether it makes them a bit embarrassed or a bit like, think I'm fishing for sympathy, or I am always, I'll say, look, I'll stop talking about it, and oh, don't worry, he's fine now. I never want to make people feel uncomfortable talking about it, because cancer is a scary thing, and it's still a scary thing. But that, yeah, I do always put those sort of, I don't know if they're barriers, but say, oh, no, don't worry. And there's a sympathy face that people do, and I think, no, I'm not looking for that. He's fine now. He's fine. But it is a huge part of my life and our experience, and I don't have to know you very long before I'll talk about it. Because, but yeah, I am wary of making people uncomfortable, and would never want to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. It's not coming from a place of trying to make somebody feel uncomfortable, is it? I think it's more a symptom of our society, in the sense that, the messaging we're given around cancer is terrifying, and it is terrifying in real life as well. Taking the small steps where we can to break it down a bit, so that if somebody in your life does disclose something like that to you, that we're able to react with some empathy rather than sympathy, and be a bit more open-minded about what that might mean, because it's a much more complex situation than we would find out in the media, for
Exactly.
example.
Who would have realized life's complex?
Yeah, really?
Because we do, you see, that's something that society does. It tends to be very black and white, and everything should be straightforward. And this, I don't know if it's making people more stressed and more worried about things when things don't go exactly to plan. And that's that resilience for me. It's about having something in the tank to cope when something sideswipes you on a Tuesday afternoon. And I haven't got all the answers by any means, but I'm a talker, definitely.
Well, that's what I've always admired of you. So it's a really really funny year to be asking this. And I've asked a few other people, what's their plans? But that's kind of a ridiculous question, isn't it? You know, are there any personal or professional projects coming up or things you're really excited about?
Well, yeah, well, a couple of things. Work-wise, I don't mind saying, very, very keen to find out if Calderdale have been successful in getting this future High Streets money for Elland, because I really think that's what can make a difference. We can do some relatively simple small projects that might change the whole face and give the place a lift. So that's quite exciting. The library, getting that completed and having people see what a beautifully, sympathetically refurbished building, because it is in a conservation area. We want to still have a nod to the history of the building and the town. So that's quite exciting. It's a bit one day at a time on a personal level, isn't it? My first trip that is planned is June next year. And I booked it in a little fit of pique about 6 weeks ago when we'd just gone back into what we now know as tier two, but was called local restrictions or whatever. And I thought, we've got to be at a point where it's over soon. When is that point going to be? And so I've booked a few nights in Guernsey, which is another of my favourite places, childhood holiday destination and subsequent family holiday destination. And so I'm going there with a friend. And at the end of that week, Niall Rogers is at the Peace Hall in Halifax. I have tickets for that. And my whole mental image that gets me through this horrible winter that's to come is going to be about being on the beach in Guernsey, followed by dancing in the Peace Hall with a cider in my hand to some really great 70s disco. That's my get you through the rest of 2020 plan. Daydreaming, basically. My short-term challenge is the walk up Beacon Hill. I don't know if you've ever been at Beacon Hill in Halifax, so you can look over the whole town.
I haven't.
Right.
But well, I want to.
Right. Well, you and I need to get a day booked in. I am doing it 52 times before I'm 52. I've done it 16 so far, and I've got 43 days to fit the remaining 36 times in. And I've, via my Facebook page, I just said, right, anybody want to come with me? This is where you meet and this is what we do. And I've had quite a few friends and colleagues already. And the only condition is we have a selfie at the top. So I'm getting quite a gallery of socially distanced selfies with the beacon and the view of Halifax. So I will add you to that list without a doubt. I'll drop you an email and you can walk up a big hill. It's just a lovely view for me. I find it very calming to see a town from up above, really. It's not a view you would get of many towns because of the nature of the landscape again, isn't it? But it's fascinating and always different at different times of year and different weathers at different times of day. It's a little 5K circuit from my front door and back again. And it's helping keeping me sane in these working from home whilst being an empty nester. There's a beautiful book called The Wild Remedy. I don't know if you're aware of it, by Emma. Yeah, I can't remember. The Wild Remedy anyway. And she takes, it's a diary for a year. And she uses nature as a way to fight her depression, to see the changing natural world as the time moves on, and she does beautiful drawings and photographs. It's a lovely book. I texted somebody recently and said, one of my favourite things about this lockdown was discovering new paths. And it sounded much more deep than I intended, because I didn't mean in life. I just meant footpaths that lead somewhere, literally a new path. Oh, where does that go, that gap in the hedge? But it did sound, when I'd written it, like I was having some epiphany and was the Dalai Lama or something like that. I just meant a new footpath somewhere else.
Well, thank you so much, Angela. It's just been amazing to hear about your amazing work that you do here. I'm forever grateful to you. I know you don't really understand that, but and also for being, you know, telling us your personal story is just thank you really very much for sharing that. It's
quite welcome.
I feel very privileged to be here and have you share that. Well, thank you so much, Angela.
Thank you, Sam. Really appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
Her honesty, resilience and optimism is just so inspiring, and I'm so grateful to her for sharing that with us. Thank you, Angela. For information on support for people experiencing cancer, go to the show notes for a range of resources. I'm pleased to report that Angela and I made it up Beacon Hill together not long after recording this episode. We had a wonderful socially distanced walk and I left feeling refreshed and invigorated. The book that Angela mentioned, The Wild Remedy, is by Emma Mitchell, and all the info is in the show notes. I'm so excited to see how things develop for Elland too. We're still waiting on the outcome of the Future High Streets Fund, so in the meantime, we're keeping everything crossed. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to Curious Emotion to get new episodes every Tuesday. Until next time, remember, tune into your body, be kind to yourself, and stay curious.